Okay, here we are, hour number two. There is a lot going on out there that you are not being told about. Now, we can take almost any category of conversation: geopolitics, finance, military, war, health. Now, there's the big one. That's how I honestly approach this. I think they, you know who they are, they are controlling the media to the extent that we are really hearing relatively little about the threat to our health. And I'm talking about the 81% plus of Americans who have taken the injection or injections. Some people, 5-6 is not uncommon, different shots. And they're dying. They're literally falling apart, piece by piece, area by area. It doesn't matter. The human body cannot tolerate that bioweapon. Over time, and Deagle.com, it may not be far off the mark at all. I give it till the end of 2025, another year, and I'm afraid that during this next year, we're really going to see a tsunami of people dying. They're already dying. They just don't know it. All right. Are you there, young lady?
Good evening.
Erica's back. Okay. Now, we have a special guest tonight, our pal, Nurse Ann, is back with us tonight. Nurse Ann is a career nurse, over 35 years. She works in some of the biggest hospitals in the country, most specifically in the New York area, New York State area, and she knows what's going on. She is a hero to many of her patients and to us, and she has done remarkable things to try to save lives and extend the hand of compassion and kindness to those who are being stricken and taken down and often out by these terrible bioweapons, which were completely created and turned loose on the world's population. It's not just us. It's everybody. Hello, Nurse Ann.
Hello, Jeff and Erica.
Hi, Ann.
Hi. How are you both doing?
Well, we're still not shot up, and we're doing fine. Thank you.
We're still here.
That's
you?
The most important. I'm still here too.
Yes, like yes, ma'am.
It's very difficult to take me down for some reason, you know.
No, well,
still
thank
hanging
goodness
in
for
there.
That. Yeah, here. Let me do this. I just want to run down the news headlines, health news headlines, which you'll find in headlines within probably 5-10 minutes. They're up. All right, I'm going to save the best for last. First, from the Congo in deepest, darkest Africa, a flu-like disease, they're calling it Disease X, the CDC says they don't know what it is, has infected 394 people at last count and killed at least 71. That's a fairly robust case fatality rate. Second story, from the Congo, an American flew back home and has been taken into health isolation after reporting flu-like symptoms flying to Cleveland from the Congo. So we've got one possible patient zero or first case. We don't know. We don't know what he has. So they're watching him. That's encouraging to hear. Number three, Marburg is back in Rwanda. Of course, it never went away. Deadly outbreak of Marburg in Rwanda leads to travel advisory. All right, the next headline. CDC breaks silence as mystery flu-like infection kills dozens of African children and sparks COVID-style travel restrictions. And that relates back to the Congo story, the first one. That's what they're talking about. And the next to last one is Vax Ghoul Gates infuriates India after calling it a laboratory for testing. Well, I think the Indian government knew that, but the people didn't want to hear it, so he's getting ripped up a little bit. Not enough, but that's what they do. They use Africa, India, to try these things out. All right, here's the number one story, and this is big. Now, if you were with us last time, you got a really extraordinarily complete and understandable summary of where we are with Group A strep. which now has a new variant, M1UK, which is 950% more virulent than the traditional Group A strep, which can morph into necrotizing fasciitis. So now we have something 9.5 times more virulent than the original, which can also turn into Group A strep fasciitis. It's dead. It'll kill you. Necrotizing tissue turns black. You've seen many pictures, I'm sure. Okay, here's the big story. We have been on this for a long time. Prion disease. It's not talked about much, otherwise known as CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. 300% increase in prion disease predicted, forecast by 2028 or sooner, all caused by the spike protein. So CJD, prion disease, death. ALS, we're going to get to that in the near future. Another one that'll kill you, which comes from the spike protein, the injections. And then we've got Group A strep now with a new variant that is 950% more virulent. These are not good things. So, Erica, go ahead and tell us, bring us up to date on what I missed, what I didn't state clearly, and then we'll go to Nurse Ann and find out if she's seeing this Group A strep either strain and her work platform in the hospital. This will be interesting.
Well, yeah, you stated it very well. The only thing you left out is that you have to understand that this bacteria, Streptococcus pyogenes, which we call Group A strep, can manifest in the body in different ways. And one of them is cellulitis, and which can very quickly progress into necrotizing fasciitis because the bacteria produce toxins that literally dissolve your tissue. And the tissue dies, it becomes necrotic, and the bacteria feast on it. Then you don't have a blood supply to that area, and this all can happen very, very quickly. So that's why, you know, if there's even a remote suspicion that this is what you're dealing with, and it's hard to know. You know, strep is not the only bacteria that can cause cellulitis. Don't play around at home. You know, get to an emergency room and be properly evaluated, because you can read story after story of people who waited too long and paid a very dear price for it. You know, and at a minimum, they've been opened up and had to have surgical debridement. And at
or they
worst,
lose fingers,
they could be
or
amputated.
They lose toes. Yeah, it's we're talking hours here.
Affected.
We're,
yes,
we're not talking
yes,
days.
Hours.
Okay.
But the other manifestation of strep, and this typically happens with children, is strep throat. And for some reason, with this strain, and you know, possibly as a result of COVID, either the virus or the injection does something to the immune system that weakens it and makes these kids particularly susceptible to going from just, you know, plain old strep throat to toxic shock syndrome. And it's a particular type of toxic shock called streptococcus toxic shock syndrome, which, you know, distinguishes it from the staph version of it, staphylococcus. But this particular form of toxic shock is infinitely more aggressive and much higher fatality rate than the one caused by staph. And I was just reading a thread today. It was from earlier this year, 13 weeks ago, and two mothers were talking about how they'd lost their four-year-old kids back around Christmas time last year. And it went within 2 days, 48 hours.
That's plural. That's dead. Kids, children.
Two of them,
two.
Yeah. And then another one chimed in about her husband having had necrotizing fasciitis.
Wow.
So it's out there.
Yeah. All right. Let's find out from Nurse Ann. Are you seeing, let's start with Group A, the new variant or the traditional variant. What are you seeing, Nurse Ann? Are you running across that much? And if so, how is it expressing?
Actually, we've had a lot of patients coming in with bad wounds, and to the point where this week I did take care of a patient who has necrotizing fasciitis, and it's bad. It's she waited too long. She stayed at home too long. She said it started out as a blister that she kept bursting.
She tried to drain the blister on it. Where was it?
It was on her abdomen. And then it kept on blistering. And she kept on bursting the blister to the point where it started to develop a wound underneath the actual blister. And she didn't realize what was going on. And then when she finally made it into the hospital, she had such, so the infection had just gone from the area, the initial source, on one side of her body, all across the entire abdomen, from the left to the right. So
would you call this, Nurse Ann, excuse me, would you call this cellulitis at this point spreading in her deep tissues?
Yes. It initially, that's what they thought it was. But once they started doing the blood cultures and the workup, and then they had to open her up. They had to do a huge debridement on her. So they opened up the abdomen from left to right, and there was basically necrotic tissue underneath. So it just started eating away, tunneling in the abdomen. And so when she came to the hospital, at that point she was so sickly. The infection had already gotten so bad that it was affecting her blood pressure. So now she was she was hypotensive, and now she was dependent on medication to keep her blood pressure in a safe zone so that her organs could be perfused. She ended up getting intubated. She ended up on multiple drips. We call them pressors, but there's multiple drips to try and keep the blood pressure up. She was continuously monitored on the heart monitor, and she had wounds that just seemed to never stop spreading. Once the initial wound was opened up and they debrided it, it went from her lower abdomen down into her area of her upper thigh. So it had actually tunneled from the whole right across the abdomen down to her left thigh.
So was there a diagnosis made of the type of bacteria? Did they nail it to strep or staph? What did they come up with?
They actually nailed it to the strep A that you're talking about now. And the official diagnosis, because she came in with an infection, but the official diagnosis after being here so long, because now we're looking at now months and months of treatment. But she is, and she's still in the hospital. She's been in the hospital a total of 3 months, they told me so far.
Well, Erica, would you step in and explain? People are going to want, how the hell do I get it? Where is it? What do I have to watch out for? Where is this group A strep, either the traditional or the new strain, which has been around, by the way, for 17 years now? They've identified it that long ago. Where do people come into contact with it? That's what a lot of people right now would like to know. So let's tell them.
Well, it's in the environment, and in several countries, UK, Australia, Canada. I don't know how if it's become the dominant strain here, but in those particular countries, that is deemed to be the dominant strain of strep A, that particularly aggressive one. But it's when it's in the environment, you can pick it up anywhere. You know, surfaces.
It can be on your skin all the time, right? Right.
Yes. Some people are colonized.
Anywhere.
And definitely, if somebody's got a strep throat, if their oral cavity is colonized by strep, which some people are, not everybody, but some are, and they can harbor it, without symptoms. You can spread it through respiratory droplets.
Wow. All right. So you want to laugh at masks? Go ahead. If a mask was only worth 10% safety for me, I'd take it. I know it's worth a lot more than 10%. So whatever it is, I will bend that advantage my way. And I hope all of you give that some really serious consideration. Go ahead, Ann.
Well, the big thing is, too, is if you are having an open area on your skin anywhere, and I mean anywhere, there you're already setting yourself up for the potential to get this.
Wow.
So, and
a cut, a scratch, a bump, a bruise, anything that...
Yes.
Got it.
Anything. And any kind of a surface as well. But that may not necessarily be... as clean as you think it was. They say one of the worst things that actually that spreads the worst amount of germs is our phone. The phone.
Yeah.
Is what? Say that again. I'm sorry, I missed it. Is our what?
The phone. The phone.
Oh, the telephone.
Use. Yeah, the telephone and the cell phones. The cell phones the most because people take their cell phones everywhere with them, literally everywhere with them.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like let's not forget grocery store shopping cart handles. I think those are horrible myself.
Yeah, I mean,
people touch them all day long.
Literally anywhere, anything that surfaces you touch from, and somebody else can touch again thereafter,
right.
Is just setting you up for just huge amounts of problems.
Well, that's interesting. You had mentioned cell phones. They are. They've got to be crawling with bacteria. You're picking them up all day long and pressing them into the keys of your phone. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this lady, she ended up getting gangrene in part of the area that they had to do the debridement in.
How old a woman, Anne? How old a person is this?
57. 57. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now,
and 3 months in the hospital.
Three months in the hospital. There were two huge problems. Three huge problems she had against her right from the get-go. From her medical history standpoint, she was obese, she was diabetic, and she had a history of hypertension. So those three things set her up hugely for complications. And then I looked in her chart, and she's back, and had recently also gotten a flu vaccine a month before she actually started having these symptoms.
That's not three strikes, that's four strikes.
That was the cherry on top right there.
Yeah, wow.
And then
slowing down. They're still taking these damn shots. I don't blame them. They're a captive audience. They're being programmed and forced into this with constant barrage of commercials and the rest of it. But Erica and I found out that stores like Rite Aid and CVS, they're pumping out 60 a day, every day.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I go to the supermarket, I see it for myself. I see all these fools standing in line, waiting to get the vaccination. And I want to go up and shake them and just say, please just open up the phone that you have in your hand that you're looking at TikTok right now, and go to any website that has the correct information that tells you that why you shouldn't be getting these vaccines. Well, I can give you give you a person's name if you want it. I just want to lead you to the right source so that you know what you're about to do. But a lot of it is too late anyway because they're already.
Yes, once they're injected with a viable, functional bioweapon, or even if they get this damn virus, which is a functional bioweapon too, if they get the virus once, twice, they can both cases can be disastrous in time.
Yep.
For sure.
Both cases, yeah, for sure. And then I have some major news for you. This one's a huge shocker. In our area, little area here, we had a case of two cases of Ebola and one case of monkeypox.
Oh boy!
Uh oh.
Are they quarantined?
Oh yeah, yeah. And the thing is, nobody, none of the nurses want to go in the room with the patients that have the Ebola.
Was this in your hospital, Anne?
Yes, they had two cases come through the ED.
Now, I'm sure the CDC was contacted for this.
Absolutely.
Certified CDC.
Yeah, there's a whole protocol you have to follow.
Involvement, yeah. Wow. This is not good. I wonder if there are any other cases in other hospitals in the area. Where does the CDC or your health authorities there, where do they think they got somehow infected with Ebola?
So here's one of the things. They think that one person was traveling and they came in contact with the Ebola that way. So the other person, they're not sure how she contacted the Ebola.
Erica, don't we think that Ebola is potentially aerosolized in terms of transmission vectoring?
It's
not easy, but it's possible, right? Well, anyway.
Yeah.
All right. It's not a primary concern.
It's not a real efficient mode of transmission. I mean, you really need close contact with bodily fluids.
Mm-hmm. And I think there was probably a sexual encounter with the girl, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
what's the prognosis
of
these people? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Erica.
I was going to ask, are these Americans or are they foreigners?
Here's the thing. One of them is a foreign person and the other person is an American.
Okay.
So the American person who got it while they were traveling, or it actually was a work thing.
So we got two certified cases of Ebola here in the U.S. in one hospital we know about. And God knows what else is going on.
And they're really keeping it on the down low. They're not letting the public know.
I hear
you. When you arrive at that hospital, you will see various signage on the doors for each patient. And you will know that there are certain protective gear you have to wear. You will never know what it is that they're in quarantine for. So the general public do not know. But they...
This is being covered up. I mean, here we have a claim of Rwanda having Marburg, but no real definitive proof, but it's a claim, a statement. And yet here we have two certified cases of Ebola. Are they bleeding actively? What's the rumor?
The blood products it's a whole thing. It's like the GIC. You see a little bit of that too, in it, where they're bleeding and clotting. We're pumping blood products into them. We're checking their blood work. Typically, you would check their blood work, daily, like their complete blood count, and see where their hemoglobin levels and the hematocrit levels are. And we're doing nearly every 6 hours on their dose lab.
Did you say that they're pumping blood products into these people to try to stabilize and strengthen their overall hematology?
Yeah, because they're losing huge amount of volume.
Oh, my. Yeah.
So they're getting blood products that are likely completely
I didn't want to go there.
I know. And the thing, the people, the nurses who were in the know, it's frightening, because what you have to face, and a lot of people don't want to, there are nurses who will just flat out refuse to take the assignment. Someone's got to take care of the patient.
I understand that. I mean, but what Erica just said, I was going to say, but I backed off, is that these people are being given blood products that probably will end up killing them anyway. Blood products are not safe. Blood is not safe. No. None of the blood products are safe. They've got spike protein in them at the very least. They may have the mRNA instructions in there as well. It's too dangerous. So what a terrible, terrible situation we're in here. I think that in that hospital, real quick, somebody's going around with gloves on and maybe PPEs, whatever, and sanitizing every damn door handle and every pen at every nurse's station often. I would think.
Or you bring your own stuff, which is what I do. Wow. I don't do that. I don't use any of the like implements for writing. I use all my own stuff.
And
I use my own stethoscope, which I'm very proud of because it's very expensive and I love it. But it's the only thing I have to say is now it's about better protect yourself as much as you can. Now these are the known cases of Ebola. There's the two isolated cases.
I'm surprised this is not headline news, frankly, the way this media works.
No,
they obviously, I would suggest they have more cases in other hospitals, and they're keeping a lid on this.
No. And these people are here for months at a time, too, by the way. It's not surviving it. Yeah. And so they've been a long time, months in ICU, because they're required to have so many medications, treatment the symptoms. So some days they'll have really good days, and then in a matter of hours, it'll change to huge critical really fast. You're just completely caught off guard. It doesn't matter how good a nurse you are. You're going to be caught off guard at some point with these patients because their body will just go into full-blown attack.
When a nurse refuses an assignment, that must get around like the speed of light in the hospital. That's a big deal.
I don't get to refuse because I'm travel and so I'm just there to be kicked around. So I won't get to that privilege to refuse an assignment. Now the only time you can actually refuse an assignment where it's legit, this is legit too, I guess. The only time you can get to refuse assignment is if the acuity numbers are too high and too many patients to one nurse. And so I've been in a situation there last year where we all showed up on shift and there wasn't enough nurses. So the charge nurse for a night said, do not take report, because otherwise you'll have to assume care. So we all stood there and it was just there waiting before supervision decided to come up and fix the problem and try and get people in to take care of the patients, because it puts your license at risk. That's the number one thing. And it's always at risk now anyway. So whether it's the numbers issue or what the diseases we're dealing with, your license is always at risk. We're always short staffed. There's never enough help. And most of the core staff, which would now have been the staff that would have been the regular staff people in the hospital, are minimum. And most hospitals are now staffed by nursing, travel nurses.
Well,
so, it's not unheard of to hear that. Now, they are doing their best.
That's remarkable.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
There are people who are trying to do their best. And they'll be there to help these people. But there's also a lot of issues with the fact that the system is completely and utterly broken. And what really irked me this week, I mean, the one day I was off, I decided to turn on the local, not the local news, but the national news to take a listen to hear what they were talking about. And I heard, oh my God, my blood was boiling when I heard this. That they were probably looking to try and pardon Fauci.
Oh, yeah.
Said, if there was ever a person that needed to serve his sentence, and was that man, just him alone would save the human race quite a lot of trouble.
There is no punishment too severe for that man.
No.
Period.
It's
not
I agree.
Possible.
Yeah, I agree. It's been tragic. And so just to give you an example of just how bad our staffing issues are, and this is a true and honest to God case that just happens.
What are these machines, Maria? Nurse Anne, what is it? I'm sorry. What machines?
No, it's a new case that happened recently.
Yeah.
was a case that came in because we're so short-staffed, and that because we're so short-staffed, this situation happened where this very young 34-year-old female came into the hospital. She was initially in the hospital over Thanksgiving weekend. It came in with a traumatic pneumothorax, which is basically a collapsed lung. It was secondary to a rib fracture that she had sustained, that she said she didn't know how she got it. But the ED doctor, to his credit, was able to, that he saw bruising, so he associated with some sort of a physical assault.
It sounds like domestic assault, possibly, something.
Here's the problem. She ended up having to get a chest tube put in because her lung was collapsed. So right. She had a chest tube in. It's in her lung. It's draining. It's connected to a vacuum chamber. And technically, then it's hooked up to the wall suction in the room. So she got really, she's had a lot of issues in her life and whatever. And she ended up leaving. But she had watched the nurses disconnect the tubing from the site, the actual site where she had her catheter in her lung, and had watched the nurses do it over time, and then figured out how to disconnect herself. She left the hospital with the chest tube still in her. She walked out of the building and then 2 days ago, she showed up really sick in the hospital because the problem was the infection that had built up, and the exposure with the chest tube, and all of this is all related to, not because somebody didn't care or not because somebody didn't want to commit. It was not because somebody didn't want to have the time to give to her. It's because she physically was able to get up and walk out of that hospital, and there's just not enough help. There's times in the unit where you look down the hallway, and the whole hallway is empty, and all the nurses are in the room. So who's watching anybody when they walk out of the room and go down the hallway?
Right. Well, it's incredible. Sure there's stories like this going on all over the place. You just don't hear about them, of course. Let me ask you, if we can, in our remaining time, we've got about 15 minutes, are you seeing more CJD? Now, that's prion disease for all of you out there who aren't tracking this. That's where the brain begins to die from prion misfolded proteins. Are you seeing, or you're not in the neurology unit anyway, so you might not.
No, I'm now in a medical, like, step-down unit. It's one unit, and I go between that and the ICU.
Uh-huh.
So it's medical ICU, medical step-down. So I go between them two units.
Right.
I'm not in the neuro unit anymore. The big thing with that was there's huge behaviors. We're having issues with people acting out like crazy, and they're not diagnosing it. As such, but I don't think they're working people up the way they should, but I guarantee you that there's elements that screen prion disease here. But they're not looking at a detailed enough picture.
Now, when you say acting out, I assume that means anger, yelling, combative, hostile. They're not being real sweet. This is also something that can come about after, Erica, right? A couple of COVID injections. I mean, we're seeing so many stories we have of personality changes, mostly hostile. They don't get nicer.
Well, any time you get inflammation in the brain from whatever, you can have these behavioral and cognitive issues, impulse control issues. So, you know, what's causing it? You know, the metabolism is so disturbed and deranged from these shots, and everything else that, you know, whether these people have had the virus, still have the virus, on top of whatever other infections, because a lot of times, you know, the stress of the infection right. and or the shots awaken other viruses that would normally not be a problem, you know, Epstein-Barr being one of them, but there's others like cytomegalovirus, and that could affect the brain, and then there's, you know, viruses that are normally quiescent in the brain that can wake up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ann.
It's anybody's guess. I mean, how...
I'd like to hear a little more about how they act out, if you can. What are they doing?
Yeah.
Throwing things? What are they doing?
So the night that I couldn't come on the show, I went into work, and they gave me... I was on the step-down unit that night, so a medical step-down unit. So they gave me 3 patients, which is the max you can have on that unit because of the intensity and acuity of the patients that you're seeing and managing. And right off the bat, they gave me 2 very, very confused patients. And one was constantly trying to escape and run out of the building. I partly had a blamer. But the other one was, and these both, by the way, these both of these patients were in their 30s. The young man was 33 and the woman was 36. So, and the young man, he was very, very hostile towards all staff members. He had been restrained because he was so violent.
Wow.
And he broke the wrist restraint. He literally broke off the bed. Like, the superpower was unreal. And he had another restraint going across his belly to hold him in place in bed. And he was able still scooting down at the bottom of the bed. He'd sit full flat up and just, like, pure anger and hate. He just hated everything about being in that situation. And I don't know if he knew what he was doing, but all I can tell you is he was extremely violent. And he kicked me at least once. He tried to punch me another time when he got his restraint free. We had him on a one-on-one case where he had a permanent sitter in the room. We had to call security a total of 4 times to try and come and control him. And we couldn't control him when we were trying to give him care. He was screaming and cursing at the top of his lungs. And then he ended up getting medicated to try and calm him down and get him somewhat under control.
Did that work?
They were saying that it's probably he has delirium, ICU delirium. Now, I've seen ICU delirium. For a 33-year-old, I don't think this is... I don't believe this is ICU delirium. I think something else is going on that they're the same. But he was medicated with Ativan, Haldol, Geodon, pain medications, Benadryl, and melatonin. All of those drugs. And it took from the time I went into the beginning of my shift to like 7 o'clock that morning before I could actually get him to settle down. So I spent 12 very, very, very long hours trying to calm this man down. And he was wide awake through all of that.
That's Haldol, all of those things, and he still
Haldol,
wouldn't calm
Ativan.
Down.
Yeah, Benadryl. One Benadryl knocked me out for nearly 2 days. Because it's strong enough to knock me out. One Benadryl. But he was getting Benadryl.
What was his initial reason for being in there? What was the diagnosis? What was he supposed to be there for?
So he was found down at home, apparently, that 33-year-old. Keep that in mind. He was found down at home by the neighbor. And they thought he had probably had a stroke or some sort of a...
He was down on the ground, okay. Yeah,
like he had been found unresponsive. So they thought he might have had a stroke, or that he had a cardiac event that led to a stroke or something like that, or a combination of the two, because it was discussed that both potentially could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So when he came in, he didn't seem to exhibit any cardiac events. He didn't see any damage to his heart or stuff. But he was really tachycardic, which is a super fast rhythm, which is, it was bordering on lethal. So we were getting to the point where it was really, so we had to medicate him to try and control his heart rhythm.
Sounds like a movie. How many other times have you seen a patient break restraints?
One other time. And it's scary as hell. It's scary. I'm sorry, I hate to say that, but it is.
Because I believe it.
The patient doesn't know what they're doing, but it's terrifying when you're the only nurse in the room and you are you have to get out. And they
He kicked you twice and hit you?
Yeah, he kicked me twice, but he tried to punch me and he missed. And one of the girls grabbed his hand in the middle of the whole ordeal.
Wow.
But we were trying to provide care to him because he couldn't.
Of course.
Even though he was 33 and he should have been able to take care of all his basic needs, he could no longer do that either because he was just so out of control. Like his mind just seemed to be taken over by something. And that's all.
Sounds like the 20-year-old mother lifting a car off her child after a wreck. Superhuman strength. That is scary stuff.
Yeah, it was chaotic, and that was the night that that was Wednesday night. I wish I'd stayed at home. But yeah, so it's been it's not just the young people. The old sweet grandmother people that you think that used to be there, that was your typical patient. It's not them. You're not seeing them people anymore. You're seeing people that are easily upset. They're easily triggered. There was one lady who came in. This is another thing that's going on, Erica, just for research, is there's a huge amount of peritoneal dialysis happening for some reason. So that's just, not sure why we're seeing so much of it, but we're seeing a lot of peritoneal dialysis, and then ultimately it's going to hemodialysis. But so you'll see a lot of behaviors with that clientele as well.
Wow.
And behaviors. But it's extremely challenging because the job is actually almost more mentally draining than it is physically.
I can understand that. You earn every penny you get. This is not easy work. And with your experience, you must be very highly in demand. I'll bet people look to you among your staff, peers, your friends, coworkers, for guidance. I mean, it sounds like we're in almost uncharted territory here. Things have changed terribly.
Things are definitely changing, and things are... people are very sick. The population is very, very sick. And if you talk to any nurse, if they're open and honest with you, and I would hope they would be, but you can't always guarantee it. But if you're honest and you ask them what is the patient population looking like right now, there's never been a sicker population of people.
Mm-hmm.
And what once might have seemed minor is huge now. It's escalating to the point where we're just chasing the demon. He is so far ahead of us, it's not even funny now.
I would suggest only that these bioweapon injections are so satanically evil and complex, and there are so many different ways that it can take the body apart, that I'm not surprised to hear what you're saying, frankly. I had a feeling that the population in this country has never been sicker en masse. It's awfully sick. Erica, go ahead.
What's the situation in the emergency room these days? Is it still overrun?
Yes. All the time. There's people days and days waiting on stretchers in the ED. And there's the turnover. The staff on they don't see the other side of it, where the staff on the floor are trying to keep up with the pace of all the patients coming up. It's a huge stressor. But they're actually making, if you can just see this, I couldn't believe what I saw this. There's one unit where they have made a bed and a nightstand table in the hallway of one of the units, and they put one of those pull curtains around it, and that's how they're basically having that patient stay in that unit. And guess what?
Wow.
This is the kicker. She's technically in a hallway. That her insurance would be charged for a room. Even though she spent her time in a hallway, and she's been there, because he's been there for the last 2 weeks I've been going in.
Oh my goodness.
So she's been in this makeshift bed room in a hallway.
Incredible.
So it really is sad to see where it's all going. And I honestly don't know how they'll fix this, but it needs to be fixed. And I have hope for a new administration that they'll try to do something. But I worry and fear that the people who are responsible for what happened to this system is going to walk away. And that upsets me greatly to think that could potentially happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I know RFK has been very, very blatant about some of the criticisms on the vaccines, and he was very health conscious. I know there's other sides to him that raises some questions, but you can't take away from the fact that he had some very good advice, and he was very strong in regards to the vaccine. He initially came out and spoke against them. Now, I heard mumblings that he did promote them later on, but I know I bought his book, and he had, his book was pretty good. So he wrote the book on the re-election strategy, and he did cover a lot of topics in that book that we were not allowed to treat COVID the way it should have been treated, and that is the case. They were using a medication that was causing huge complications and multi-system organ failure, and they knew it. They all knew it. The CDC
yep.
knew it, the FDA knew it, and the World Health Organization knew it. They have all blood on their hands.
Yep.
They all knew it. And that is where the system is broken at this point. And again, I don't know what they're going to do to fix this. But I hope it's going to be something soon.
How the hell are they going to fix it? How are they going to fix it?
That's the thing. I mean, the people who are vaxxed already are, I would imagine, this is how I see it, that when they make a drug, they usually make the drug and the antidote, as a general rule, right? Isn't that correct?
Yeah,
wouldn't you say that? So I would think when they made this awful vaccine that there was some form of an antidote for it. I want to believe that there was something there. But this is me hoping and wishing. But I don't know.
Well, what they succeeded in doing, though, in getting the majority of the population shot up with this stuff or infected, chronically infected with it, they've guaranteed themselves a revenue stream, you know, in every area of medicine, because this thing manifests in so many different ways, depending on the person. They've just built a whole new economy on this.
Correct. They did.
And so now it's like they can apologize after the fact and punish them after the fact, but, you know, the crime has been committed, and we'll have this ripple effect now for generations.
Yeah, it's the only generations that will be exempt from it are the ones that are the newborns that never get the vaccine. That's the only chance we have for the human race.
Yeah, and if the parents aren't shot up.
That's the other point. That's true, too. But most, if the,
I mean, how many are left?
If the child doesn't get shot up, the odds are hopefully the parents aren't either. But you never really know. Sometimes that's the other issue, too. There's one goes against the other. So
right.
I don't know, but I have to believe there's an antidote, because normally they would make an antidote. If they make a drug, they usually try to make an antidote for the drug. So I would want to believe, but then again, all the cancers, all the people that have kidney failure now, lung disease, you name it, it's across the board. All the issues with wounds, and we've seen everybody coming in with wounds. Everybody has huge wound issues, but part of the problem is they're debilitated. They don't have that function to move around freely, so
right.
they're
yeah.
kind of active prisoner. And then
right.
there's the financial end of it for everybody. That's the other side of the thing, where the element of reluctance to come to the hospital because they're financially burdened already.
Mm-hmm. Well,
everybody sees this.
Yeah, I want to say one other thing. The powers that be, the evil, satanic powers that be, when they figured this genocide out, and that's what we're talking about here, the end of the genocide track for people. They start out and they get sick, they get sicker, and they figured this all out in advance. And what I'm talking about is the enormous transfer of wealth from the patient victims to the pharmaceutical companies and other big health HMOs, etc. This is a huge transfer of wealth. Many families have been wiped out. A whole lifetime of putting together and building financial security, etc., and they've lost it all now. It's gone. Paying for care that in most cases, not all, doesn't work. Because you can't do much once they've been injected with the bioweapon, or once they get the virus severely several times, especially. There's nothing much to be done.
Once the spike protein is in the system, it's very, very difficult to overcome. Because it attacks the blood in vicious ways.
Of course.
And it's the setup for everything else to follow.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nurse Anne, we have to go. Thank you very much for about 10 different things. You're a hero. And in your profession, there are none better. So keep it up, be safe, and take care, and we'll talk again.
Thank you very much, and it's nice to talk with both of you again. And congratulations, and great to hear you back, Erica. It's a great to, soothing to hear your voice on the radio.
Thank you, and thanks for coming back as well.
You're welcome,
okay.
Anytime.
Good
Thank
night,
you.
Okay, take care.
Night.
Good night. Good night.
Right. She really is superhuman. And all you other nurses listening in and healthcare professionals who are truly committed to this profession like she is are also heroes. And we need more of you, many more of you. All right. Anything you want to add there? We're running really late here.
Good. Good to get an update on the hospital scene.
All right. Okay. Take care. Talk soon.
Okay.
Great
Thanks, Jeff. Have a good weekend,
right.
everyone.
All right. We'll be right back with hour number 3 right after this. Hold on.